Welcome back to the B2B Uncut podcast sponsored by Oro Commerce. We have another very special episode. This is the first three guest episode we've ever had in the history of this podcast. But the three guests are very, very special. They are the three original co-founders of Oro Commerce. And it took a lot of logistical work to get everybody in the same place at the same time on the same Zoom link. But we're very happy to have all of you here. Can you all please just briefly say who you are and what your role is at Oro Commerce? And then we're going to get into some very deep and existential questions about the history of the company, the purpose of the product, and the vision for B2B e-commerce. Yoav, let's start with you. What do you do here?
I'm co-founder and CEO. That's what I've been doing for the last few years.
Fantastic. Dima?
I'm CTO at Oro. I think our research and development team.
Fantastic. And last but not least, Jari Carter.
Yeah. I'm Jari. I am the CRO here, leading sales, marketing, and our go-to-market initiatives.
Perfect. And because, Jari, I report to you, I have to say that you are not only a handsome man, but a powerful man as well.
Is that a line from Pretty Woman, Aaron? I think it is.
I think it might be. And I think the first question, Yoav, needs to go to you, as you're the CEO, of course. And I think, how did you three meet originally in order to found this company?
So we actually met at Magento. So I co-founded a company called Magento way back in the day. Different era of e-commerce. Dima and I met in 2006 in Ukraine when I flew over there to meet the team that was actually working on the Magento project. It was love in first sight for me and Dima. Since then, we couldn't be apart anymore. We actually worked on the Magento project for the first years, basically until the acquisition by eBay. So very close. Dima started as one of the developers and became the lead architect there. Jari came along a bit later, I think 2008, Jari. Was that the right year?
Yeah, around 2009. Yeah.
And was leading our global sales. So we all came from there. And when I left eBay in 2012, the rest of the team started leaving. And our first kind of want was to work together again. So that was our first driving. Before we even decided what we're going to work on, what we're going to do, our first initial thought was we want to keep working together. We were having a good time. We knew how to irritate each other well enough to keep this going. So we wanted to find a way to still work together.
Fantastic.
And one of my earliest memories of working with Yoav is, like, you know, I interviewed with him. I didn't spend a lot of time with him. He was, you know, the founder, CTO, kind of had this like cool kind of rock star vibe and was doing all kind of product technology. So we were kind of in two different sides of the business. But right after the acquisition of eBay, we were from Magento to eBay. We went to this like big company party. And Yoav and I decided to karaoke the Beastie Boys together. We karaoke No Sleep Till Brooklyn. And I will never forget it as long as I live. I just remember thinking, like, this is the coolest moment ever. Like, Yoav and I are like screaming the Beastie Boys at this company event. And Dima, our getting to know each other was way more mellow. We just started spending time together around the office. And then when we decided we wanted to do something, we all just started meeting and spending time together, and the rest is history, as they say.
It's a fantastic meet cute. I like that. That's good. That's good. That's a good story. I guess the Pretty Woman quote was actually applicable to this. So, Jari, since I'll cue the next question over to you then, which is, you all have talked about you started Oro because you all wanted to keep working together, which is a good and laudable reason. Why then Oro Commerce? Why B2B e-commerce? What led you to the idea that B2B e-commerce was this sort of like separate underserved use case that there was a need in the market for?
Well, it's interesting because when we first started the business, I'm probably the worst person to answer this question because Dima and Yoav like actually dragged me kicking and screaming into building a B2B e-commerce product. When we first started, you know, Yoav, Dima, and I kind of all came together and we all had the idea that we felt like there was an opportunity for a CRM generally in the e-commerce space, you know, but there's like this idea that there could be a multi-channel e-commerce CRM and that, you know, other CRM products were more B2B focused and just didn't serve like this growing e-commerce market. And so we started to, you know, grow the CRM product, and Yoav and Dima were really just had this like very strong intuition and sense that we needed to build a B2B e-commerce platform, and that it would take all of the CRM features that we had built and just enhance them by allowing us to facilitate this buyer-seller interaction. I was the one that was like, I don't know that we should do this. I think, you know, maybe we should just stick with our CRM product. We were seeing initial traction and success. And so, you know, there was a market for it. And, you know, to build an e-commerce product was a long haul and a big vision. As Yoav likes to say, we didn't lose a single line of code in transitioning from building just a standalone CRM to having a commerce platform. And so it turned out to be the right bet. And now looking back, like looking in the rear view, it's so obvious that there was this huge gaping hole that nobody was doing. Companies were doing B2B e-commerce, but no one was doing it really well. And, you know, that's what we found is that like we have this opportunity, and what we've done is we've done B2B e-commerce really well from the ground up. And it's been awesome, but I take no credit for it. They had to drag me into this.
good answer. Good answer to that. I guess, Dima, then the follow-up is to you, which is maybe go into a little bit more depth on what Jari was talking about. You know, why would CRM be a springboard into B2B commerce? How do they, Jari said, we didn't lose a line of code. How did that work practically? And how did you see sort of the audience for two kind of different categories of software actually coming together?
Very good question, Aaron. So first of all, let's address why we started with CRM, right? So at Magento, we saw many integrations to different CRM, like Salesforce, the Sugar CRM and others. And all these integrations, I would call a little bit clunky, right? So like there are a lot of challenges you need to overcome in order to do right integration. And on opposite side of it, we saw that a Magento was used as a CRM in many cases, right? It has a pretty robust back office, and on the back office side, there are multiple implementations where Magento was used as a CRM. But the Magento back office was not designed for that. So like looking from permissions perspective, looking from the data structure perspective, the framework itself. And that's where we saw the big opportunity for us to fulfill that gap, right? To bring a CRM that plays well, first of all, with Magento. And as Jari mentioned, like our vision was a multi-channel CRM, and Magento was one of the first channels that we integrated, and that was our go-to-market strategy. And once you're working with a CRM, right, so one of the major scenarios in CRM is to support sales team, right? So a big set of CRM functions designed to support sales team, and sales team playing essential role in B2B commerce, because when you sell to another company, you cannot eliminate the sales team. And empowering sales team with the right tools and right functions, it helps to make this, them stronger and make your B2B sales process even stronger. That's where this transition from CRM to B2B commerce was very, very logical. And we continue providing all the CRM functions to the sales teams that are using Oracle.
That's a great answer. And it feels to me that the world is sort of catching up with this idea that CRM and e-commerce for B2B should not be considered as completely separate realms, and they actually, to be successfully adopted, you need them together. I think that's finally sort of being recognized by more and more companies and analysts. Yoav, next question really is to you, and this is very broad and open-ended, so you can take it in any direction that you want to. Just keep in mind that we're recording. How has your vision evolved over the years? There's been a lot of changes, I think, in technology. We have had, I don't want to call them fads, but we've had trends, let's say, in technology. We are seeing, as I said, more acknowledgement of the fact that B2B commerce is its own thing. How has your vision changed over the years, or has it at all?
I'll start by saying that I have a feeling that you'll ask me about AI later. So let's leave AI out of this vision.
Maybe.
So just talking about kind of the tech and commerce and where we are, I think a lot of the time the tech is leading the customers. And before I talk about my vision, I just wanted to say what kind of landscape we are at and have been for a while. And instead of the role that the tech companies need to do, which is solve the problem that the customers might have and provide them with a solution in a techy way to get where they need to go, I think we as technologists sometimes get too deep into the weeds and get excited about technology and trends, as you call them, and forget the customer's needs, right? And we're pushing on them some technologies and giving them options that they might not need. And sometimes we take them on these wild goose chases and they end up losing from that. So I think, first of all, that part of my vision where our role in the vision is to solve problems for customers. That's never changed. That's always something I believed in for over 30 years that I've been in tech. So that part didn't change. What changed is that we do have to look at what the new problems that customers are facing or what new technology we can kind of use in order to solve their problems better, faster, cheaper, and more reliably. And I think that's what the focus should be in the tech world. And I think that's kind of our focus here in Oro Commerce. We always look at what are the problems that the customers have? How can we build a product that solves that for them in the fastest, cheapest, and more most reliable way? And that's kind of always been our kind of general vision. You know, naming some of the trends, as you said, like composable, headless. I think, again, they are good solutions if they're used properly. But overusing them or starting to use them as a religion and saying this is the only way to develop and this is what we're going to do without looking at what problem we're trying to solve with it. That's why those kind of trends stay as trends. I don't see them kind of swapping the whole market into this and everybody's running to do that. And we've seen a lot of implementation that went pretty bad with that. And I think that's something that, again, we just need to keep in mind. So when it comes to my vision, I think that we still need to push. And again, leaving AI aside, I know everybody was like going to scream AI. So leaving AI aside, we have to focus on how we deliver projects faster to customers. I think today the discussion of cloud or no cloud is gone. I think like we can say 99% of our customers will use our cloud. And that's something we solve for them. That's not something they have to worry about anymore. They don't need to worry about where they're going to host it, who's maintaining the server, uptime, security, penetration testing, all those terms that they don't even need to bother with. We take care of that. So that's, again, part of where we evolve to and where we need to, as a technology industry, deliver to our customers. The other one is time to market. I think, again, we are today in a place where we can deliver much faster solutions. Using the right platforms, using the right solutions for the problems we are solving, we can get customers up and running much, much faster. Even with the type of customers we're seeing today in the enterprise level, we can have something in months, not years anymore. If you look at implementation, even 5-10 years ago, we were talking about 2 to 3 years for an enterprise to implement something. The fact that we're able today to deliver within months is, again, something that is part of our vision. We need the fast solution that the customer could start testing. The same thing like when you develop a product and you say, let's be on the market first and learn and then kind of change and improve. That's the same theory that we have to deliver for our customers. They do not need to look at the project as a 2-3 year investment before seeing results. So return on investment and fast return on investment is critical. I think that's, again, part of our vision. And that's something we are focused on. I'll say to keep that going, we kind of tend to be kind of more kind of suspicious of, or as the teenagers say, sass of all the kind of new trends. We really evaluate and we go deep into it, but we don't necessarily jump on the trend. So I think that's, again, something we keep to us, and we use it when we need to, and we use what other alternatives when we don't. So again, that will always be part of our vision and how we develop our products. And again, I'll just say it because that's the most important. The biggest vision for us and part of how we strategize around it is if our customers are successful, we will be successful. And we always think from the customer's perspective and how they will go about using our product and how they will go about being successful using our technologies and product to get where they want.
I love the answer there. Because what you're basically saying is that technology has to serve the business, and technology that doesn't serve the business is not useful. And I like the contrast you made between cloud, which started as a trend and a buzzword, right? Mm-hmm. Back in the day, and then has grown to the point that it is the standard and de facto against which all software is assumed to be cloud now at this point, unless you opt out of it sort of explicitly. Headless, composable, not so much, right? And it may, because the focus is not on delivering value and solving problems for the business, the focus is on self-justification a little bit and maybe technical purity. Nima, this is a good place to pivot over to you then. I am curious because if we started with a CRM, now we have an e-commerce platform, which is a much wider array of functionality to look at. What does the product focus look like compared to when you started? Like, are there features or priorities or emerging areas that are now part of the roadmap for Oro Commerce that were not there originally? How do you view it as the CTO differently now than you did 12, 13 years ago?
So we started with long vision on how we see our product, right? At least first version of the product, which features it should include, how it should help our customer to solve their business problems. And that was quite a journey to get there, right, to get our first version out. And at this point, we operating with live customers, right? So, and as you have mentioned, like, customer success is our key priority, right? So we listen to our customers, we know their pain points, we understand which additional problems that they would like to solve with by using our platform. And that is a huge implication of our priorities and our roadmap. So first of all, we are focusing on features that will help our customers to be more successful. At the same time, we are the product company, and we should be pioneers in some regard, right? So we need to drive our customer and drive innovation for our customers. And that is other part of our focus and roadmap. So we're working on many features, and I will use this buzzword with you, right? So we developed many features that using AI technologies to automate and optimize processes, as for a buyer, same for seller on the back office side. So I would say customer focus and innovations are our two main focus areas that we continue our investment and our R&D team keep pushing.
Got it. Okay, Jari. Where do you see the company in the next 5 years? I'm curious, though, given the history here, the way that Oro has, to me, it is a drop of water that has rippled out beyond the original conception at the beginning. I can see where there are certain maybe priorities and vision that have never really changed, but certainly the amount of features and use cases that the product and suite supports are greater than they were. So 5 years from now, can you heat up a microwave meal with Oro? Can you vacuum your floors with it? What is there anything that Oro cannot do in 5 years?
All of the above. No, I think, so Dima and Yoav talked about it. First and foremost, we really do look at Oro through the lens of making our customers successful. That's the biggest thing we want to do. If we have happy, successful customers that are growing on our platform in 5 years, that's success for me. I think Yoav talked about this focus that we have on how do we make the lives of our customer easier, especially when it comes to implementation, upgrades, enhancements that we make to the product, adopting new features and capabilities. You know, how do we make all of that really seamless for our customers? And how do we make really complex software and technology easy to adopt? I think there's another thing I think about, which is, for me, we've spent so much time over the past several years really getting this huge product built. And it is a very robust product, and it's fully featured. It has great capabilities. The three of us were on a call today, and I said, you know, I am so proud of the product that we have. You know, when we show our product, you know, customers are really impressed. There's just nothing like it on the market. And so our job over the next 3 to 5 years is to really get that message out to potential customers and our existing customers about the way that we can make their lives easier, about the way that we can add value to their business. There's so much digital transformation. And I know that's a loaded word and has a lot of meaning to a lot of different people, but no matter how you look at it, there's so much digital transformation happening right now in B2B. And I think we're going to see huge tectonic shifts in like having new winners in the B2B landscape. I think old players are going to be massively disrupted by new and innovative companies that are really thinking digital first. And I think it's a really exciting time to be in the market. And I hope that over the next 5 years, we're the ones really enabling the disruptors, exactly like what we did at Magento. I mean, it felt like what we did at Magento was we democratized and made it simpler and more approachable for people to change their industry or their market. And I think we're doing the exact same thing at Oro Commerce, and it's really exciting.
Oh, that's a good answer. We could turn this into a drinking game where every time you say digital transformation, everybody does a shot. Dima, I know, right?
I'm already done.
All I have is water here. Sorry.
I'll send you something. It's good. Well, look, that's a good setup to the next question. And you kind of started answering this. You used the word robust, which I will accept as an answer, but it's competitive advantage, which is what sets Oro Commerce apart from our competitors in the B2B commerce space. You got to come up with some new answers, though. You can't just say we're robust because you just said that. So you got to be inventive.
We talk about this all the time. I mean, there is this idea that there are e-commerce platforms, and every other e-commerce platform that I know of was built first with B2C in mind. So it's, you know, Jari wants to go buy a pair of shoes. I get a pair of size 10 shoes. I ship them to my house. And that's my account. My account is my name. I'm an individual. I'm an individual shopping. I'm a consumer. The B2B world is so much more complex than that. You know, an account in the B2B world could be a huge organization. And that account may have hundreds of buyers within the account. Those hundreds of buyers may have completely different needs, or you may want to personalize that experience down to the buyer level, what products they can purchase, what you allow them to see, what their budget is in terms of, you know, how much they can spend. There's just all this customization that, you know, companies have the ability to do when they're selling to B2B buyers. Now, if you think about what else they want, is they also want the ability to have unique checkout options. So it's not just, you know, I pay with a credit card or a one-step checkout. I may want to pay on payment terms. I want to maybe pay through ACH. I may want to pay through corporate credit. Shipping may look different, because if I'm buying something in pallets and, you know, I'm not sending it through UPS or USPS, there may be different shipping options. There's so much customization. Pricing, the whole another example. I may have per customer pricing. And so we've created features in our product to address all of these needs. And when we talk to B2B e-commerce companies, these are the challenges that they're facing, not to mention the complexity of integrating with things like their ERP system or other technologies that are meaningful to their organization, that they want to surface information to their customers. And so there's a lot of capabilities that we have in our product that address these needs that customers have that just either haven't been thought of by our competitors. At worst, they haven't been thought of, but at best, you know, they've been thought of, but they've just then tried to adapt or put add-on or bolt-on B2B capabilities on top of what is a B2C e-commerce platform. And it's like, look, I want my Toyota Camry to be as fast as a race car, but I can only modify that so much before, you know, you don't get the performance that you want. And that's what we're seeing, is these built from the ground up B2C e-commerce platforms, no matter how much modification they do, they're just not built for it.
How fast can you get your Camry up to, Jari? That's curiosity.
I won't say. I'll have the police over here. Okay. At least 85 miles per hour.
Whee! All right. That'll be good. That'll be good on the 5. You get past. Okay.
Now Toyota can sponsor a podcast, right?
That's what we need. Yes.
Toyota Racing.
BRD, yeah. Yes. So Dima, kind of like pivoting from that then, and looking back to what something Yoav had said earlier about technology, right? When you guys founded Oro, originally, and there was a CRM, and then in the rest of the capabilities, the commerce came afterwards. Organizations like the Mock Alliance didn't exist. And honestly, even cloud-based SaaS was relatively new at that time. I mean, thinking back to 2012, it was not yet, they had not yet eaten the world in the way that it has now. Why is Oro Commerce kind of architected the way that it is? Has it evolved in your mind? And do you expect it to evolve in the future in any particular way? If you're making a prediction.
And this is a good question. And in technology world, I think all technologies kind of take it as given that, okay, technology always evolves, right? So the technology never stays in the same place. And there are new technology, I would say, even every day, right? And taking into position the technology that we had in our hands when we started Oro Commerce and where we are now, these are similar but slightly different worlds, right? And as you mentioned, Aaron, like again, cloud started as a trend at that moment. And cloud and architectural principles associated to cloud evolved and become industry standards. So like you cannot stay away from something that becoming industry standards, right? And that helped us to see that, okay, that's the direction that we have to take and should be very open to that. And in things like Mock Alliance, where you have multiple architectural principles connected in one marketing world. So again, the valid thing behind it, right? So microservices, yes, sure. We do have also microservices available as part of our technology. API first, of course, right? So we should have API because now you cannot even imagine an application that doesn't have any web application programming interfaces that will allow it to integrate it in different part of your information technology system. Cloud first, obviously, right? So like headless, you should have. So on our end, we constantly following technologies and see technology trends that are getting good adoption in the industry and enabling it. And that is key principle that we as technologists should follow. We should never stay behind technology.
Good answer. Good answer. So Yoav, you haven't talked in a while. So yep. I got to ask you a question. And this is more about the business changes, right, over time. So Dima just talked about how technology has kind of changed, which you had sort of alluded to earlier. I'm thinking back, you know, when you started Oro Commerce, Magento was still an eBay company. Mahybris hadn't yet been bought by SAP. Demandware hadn't yet been bought by Salesforce. Interspire was just changed its name, I think, to BigCommerce.
I think it changed already. I think it's already changed.
Right after. And it was still Michinetti, I think, running it over there. It's a very different world now. How would you characterize the last like decade of business transition and evolution inside the world of e-commerce platforms and take the technology side of it just from a pure business side of it? What have you seen?
So I think like following what happened right after was we did see a lot of the big tech giants acquire e-commerce solutions. They picked the best one they thought they can win or whatever. But every big kind of company either refreshed or bought a new solution, right? I think we're ready for another one, right? I mean, I think it's about the new companies that will come out. When big companies buy a solution, usually it's for some kind of strategy or vision that they have for that product. Sometimes it works. More often than not, it doesn't, as we were kind of a part of. But just saying that they already acquired them, they used them, or were not successful in using them. And now it's time for the new disruptors to come on. I think that the biggest trend, again, we can see is B2C is kind of, I'll be nice and say plateau completely, and it's not like growing anymore, being nice and not trying to poke anybody. But I think the B2C world is ready for the new B2C kind of how to sell to customers or to consumers, right? It's not going to continue being just another website and another. We played around, we built all kinds of new and exciting features. And now it's kind of, okay, there's one player that's providing everything everybody needs and everybody looks the same and everybody's the same. That's when disruption will come, right? We'll see new companies coming up with complete different ways of shopping online or through other devices or whatnot. And that's, I think, what's going to happen there. When we talk about B2B, I think we're 5 to 10 years behind, again, being nice and not trying to press anybody behind that world. even more. Yeah. But I think that we are still in that process of actually doing the baby steps or the first steps for a lot of these companies to go digital. I'm not going to say go online anymore because, again, where online will be or not, we'll see. But going digital when they're interacting with their customers, I think that's their first steps. And we're doing these baby steps with them right now. And the reason I'm calling it baby steps, because it's not leaps, it's because unlike the B2C where it was tech first and then figure out how to sell stuff, I think today it's we're working with companies that are established for many, many years, some of them over 100 years. And this change is a big change management for them internally and a big change in how they communicate and transact with their customers. And what we're bringing to them today is the future of these companies staying around, right? So I think that's what we're kind of working on and part of. And I think that's the trend that I'm most excited about because there's a lot more to do here.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've heard it said that there's two ways to make money in business, bundling and unbundling. And it sounds like what you're saying is we are ready for a new bundling. We have unbundled for many years, and now it is time to rebundle and maybe create some new pathways to buying. And, you know, that kind of puts me in mind of AI a little bit and everything that how it's reshaping consumer behavior or people's behavior with how they interact with technology and where they go to find out information and how they even interact with the existing systems they have. So it's that time. It's time to talk about AI, everybody's favorite subject on a podcast for the last 24 months, I think. And Yoav, so I'll just keep it with you. I know you have thoughts. What was the aha moment for you when you realized that generative AI was going to completely change the global economy?
I think the date, November 2022, that ChatGPT was released. I think that really started showing the capabilities for the first time. I think the projects before that were kind of questionable or the results or anything was very kind of all over the place. And again, just reminding like what was the AI before that it involved a lot of data and a lot of data analysts. And if you didn't have good data, you couldn't actually build models and all that. That's what the generative AI changed, right? You don't need these data scientists and heavy models to actually use AI. And I think that's the biggest change and the biggest aha moment for the world to understand that this is not going to be just another tech. This is going to change tech and the way we're and the world in general. I think this is a new thing. And again, we'll see where it goes. But so far, it's been continuously being developed and improved and being applied to different industries. And I think we're seeing it already from our customers asking us to implement AI for them for real problems that they have and how we kind of use it for them to actually solve those problems. Again, going back to our vision of solving problems for customers.
Yep.
Again, I'm not going to tell everybody, fire everybody and just put AI to answer all your calls from now on. I don't think we're there yet.
There is a CEO who just kind of...
But I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know if we're there yet. But I think what we should do is evaluate what AI can do for your business. And again, as a tech company, what our tech can help you do with AI. And we have some really good examples of that. We created the purchase order to order kind of PO to order, we call it, where we can actually now have an AI agent scan every PO, if it's handwritten, faxed, email, called in, whatever, take that and convert it into an order. And that reduces a lot of the load on some of the sales team. So again, real life problem, how we can use AI to solve it. So like any technology, we have to kind of take the small steps into it, learn what it can do for your business. And again, be ready for when it really kind of scales and changes the world. So unlike a lot of other technology, when I say don't be early adopters, this is one I think you have to jump and start using and learning how you can benefit from it and how the products that you are using can help you use AI more often. Because you have to be ready for this. This is going to be definitely, you're asking about the economy of the world. I think this is going to be a big world event, though, once AI really, really gets into every business and every part of our lives today.
Yeah, no, it's good. You sort of anticipated some of the question I was going to ask Jari next, actually, which was about sort of practical use cases, because thinking to the earlier statement that was made, B2B businesses are 10, 15 years behind, and that's generous, in my opinion, in terms of digital transformation. Everybody do a shot. Dima's already there. What are we seeing from the world of manufacturing, distribution, supply, wholesale? Jari, are there ways in which you see our customers and our potential customers, let's say, using AI? What are they excited about when they're talking with us?
Well, I think AI on the whole has been very good for wholesalers, manufacturers, distributors. And here's why. I think it's gotten people who are historically potentially on the fence about making digital changes in their organization much more interested in technology adoption, because AI is just this huge trend that people don't want to miss out on. It is causing these companies to really look into the technology changes that they need to make within their organization to be more productive. What I see in practical reality is that generative AI right now is best in pockets where it can take simple, redundant tasks and automate those in a way that saves organizations a lot of time and productivity. You know, like what you all have talked about, this, you know, smart orders, taking a PDF order. We had a customer who said, you know, look, they adopted this capability. Then they were spending 30 minutes per order entering in order data. And they said it went down to 2 minutes because they just scan the order and then check for mistakes or errors and then, you know, enter the order. And, you know, it just helped with a lot of manual re-entry of information. So I think right now we're just getting started with AI. I think, you know, the two most immediate use cases I see is like making simple, redundant tasks non-human, which I think is a great starting point. I think the second place that I see AI really changing is in reducing the hurdles of the development hurdles for technology adoption. I mean, that the hope is that, you know, when AI really starts working, that developing software will be much more approachable because, you know, you won't have so much time in coding. And so, I think there's great opportunity around that. Now, I think that's just the starting point. I think, you know, we're going to see it over time. And as it improves, you know, we're going to see AI do more high value tasks in our lives. And this is in our lives generally, not just in B2B technology. But I think, you know, we're just at a starting point. And I like to just practically think about like, what's practical? What makes sense? Where can we really practically adopt AI, save people time, save people money, and make their lives easier?
Fantastic. I know that you mentioned Yoav earlier on, 2022, November, the first version of ChatGPT comes out. We are on, I feel like there's a new LLM now, you know, every 6 weeks, it seems like. There's a new model. There's so many providers. Every large vendor has, you know, Salesforce has a proprietary one. SAP has a proprietary one. Oracle's got a proprietary one. So Dima, this question is for you because it's a technology question, which is fundamentally, how does a product like Oro Commerce both kind of balance integrating closely enough with a model so that it actually drives the business value that Jari was talking about, so that we're actually able to automate the mundane processes and routine processes without locking ourselves into technical debt, basically? How do you stay flexible in that way?
So at this point, we're not in LLM business yet, right? So we're not training our Oro model yet. But we're experimenting a lot. We're experimenting on all fronts, and product is definitely a big area for experiments where we enable it multiple features and using different models. At this point, our strategy is to integrate the model that does the work best, right? We tried a different one. We tried Gemini from Google. We tried Claude. We tried OpenAI. And for specific tasks, some models doing a better job. So we keep this layer pretty configurable that even our customers, if they see that certain model works better in their industry, so they may plug in just a different model and benefit from features and experiences that we're delivering to automate their processes. So that's probably a magic at this point, right? So we're just not locking ourselves to specific model. So we keep this layer to be configurable and continue experimenting to find what's the best fit.
Fantastic. I think that's probably the right approach, just given how quickly the new models are coming out. It's hard to predict in 12 months who's going to be the winner at a specific type of task, or specifically who's going to have the lowest token cost for a specific type of task. Because I can absolutely see a world in which the smart order feature can be done even cheaper and went faster by a model. And that's not generative. Hey, that's not a real-time interaction of natural language processing. That's parsing text in a file. So totally understand. Jari.
No.
It's Return of the Mac. Now, I put that fact in the show notes, the script for this video, or script for this recording. I even put a link to the YouTube video from Return of the Mac. Maybe we'll play it in the podcast. You're back.
Yeah. Why wasn't that the outro? This should be the outro.
We fix all that in post-production, you know.
Start playing the song if he talks too much. So walk him off.
Exactly. So you've been gone. The big news at Oro this year is that you're here. You were one of the co-founders, but you just came back this year. You were gone for 6 whole years. And I think people really want to know, what did Yoav say to drive you off? And then what did he say to get you back?
Well, I mean, yes, it was Yoav's fault. It's Yoav's fault that it's Yoav's fault that I'm back. No, I mean, we started the business in 2012. And, you know, in reality, you know, we spent that first 6-7 years. I mean, it was a long time building. There was lots of work on the technology side. I think it was, you know, for me, it was a mix of, you know, personal circumstance, you know, my personal circumstances adjusting. And then also, you know, really the needs of the business at the time. And I think the reality was, you know, when we were still in building mode and getting adoption and traction early on, we didn't really need, the business didn't need a revenue leader to scale go-to-market and sales, not like we do now. And so I took a little time away. I took 6 years away. I was the CRO of a company called WordPress VIP, which is part of Automattic. And Yoav and I, you know, have this really interesting conversation around the end of last year. And we just talked about the idea of, you know, is the time right for me to come back into the business? And, you know, I had always been involved in the business. I helped hire, you know, sales leadership. I helped hire some folks on the team. You know, I ran the podcast for a while. We all
before
remained
Aaron
close.
Showed up. Yeah.
Yeah. We all remained. I was a poor man's errand. But like, you know, I was really involved with the business. I always loved the business. And I always was, you know, obviously wanting nothing but like the most success for Oro. But when Yoav and I talked at the end of last year, I realized that like the company was at a really special inflection point. And the special inflection point is this idea that we needed a go-to-market leader, someone who could really scale and grow the team, the business, because we have all the ingredients on the product side. The product is fully built. It's recognized by, you know, the analysts as basically, you know, the best B2B e-commerce platform. We have all the ingredients to be, you know, really successful. And, you know, we just needed to like really bring together cohesively a go-to-market team. And that is my specialty. And so, you know, it's now April 14th. I started right around the first of the year. I think from the time Yoav and I had the first conversation to my start date, I think it was like 9 days. Like it went so fast because it was just right all the way around. And I will say, you know, this 2025 has been the best year so far for me personally. I am having so much fun in the role. I'm having more fun career-wise than I ever have. And it's amazing to be back at this company with familiar faces, but also like all this new smart energy in the company. And it's just really, really fun. So I'm having a great time. And, you know, I'm so excited and happy that I joined back into the company.
That's a good answer. Dima, is it easier or harder to re-onboard somebody who already had a Google Workspace account with us in the past? Is it easy or got to migrate stuff?
That was smoothest onboarding.
Smoothest onboarding. That's why it was only 9 days, because there was already jari@oroinc.com in the database.
I still have all my old emails too. It's perfect. Like I can go back and, you know, pick up my emails from 2018, beginning of 2019. It's perfect.
Business continuity. You got to love it. Okay, we're almost out of time. I do want to give the final words, Yoav, to you and Dima. Anything you would add or subtract from what Jari had to say about his journey and coming back? And do you have any thoughts or feelings that you want to break to our audience on this podcast about Jari Carter? Now's your chance. Everyone is listening. The cameras of the world are pointed at you both.
Well, let you go first, Dima.
I'm really excited to have Jari back. It's like really, I'm not joking, that was smoothest onboarding in all sides, not only from a Google Workspace account, right? So he kind of fills the team, even we have a lot of new faces, like he like got into position like day one, and I really see how that changed in company, and I'm looking forward for very good 2025 and upcoming years.
What a good answer.
Thank you, Dima.
I will try. Well, it feels like he never left. So that's the first thing. And in reality, he didn't really leave. So he was part of the company, just not actively on an everyday kind of business, but he was getting updates. We were talking all the time. So it was, again, like Dima said, it was the smoothest kind of re-onboarding that we ever had, and definitely the right one. I mean, he's part of the company, he's back home, part of the family here. And we're all excited. And the new people as well, they felt it immediately. The culture was right there. It wasn't somebody new trying to bring a culture from some other company. So on all fronts, this was the right time for all three of us to go back to work together. And we're doing it. So we're all happy with this, with Jari's decision to come back and the fact that we made the offer right on the right time. So everything worked out.
It was good time. It's good timing all the way around this year.
It's good. So far, we're clicking on the right timing. Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I will just say, and I know we're a minute over, but I think it's important to note, because we talk about this, when we talk to people outside of the company, customers or whoever else. But, this partnership between the three of us really works because we decided first that we wanted to work together. And then we decided, what we would do. So for us, like going back to, I wasn't excited about a B2B e-commerce platform. I was so wrong about that. So I'll forever eat my words.
We'll edit that out, Jari.
Yeah. But, I was like, it mattered more to me who I was doing it with. And this, the partnership between the three of us works because first and foremost, we're friends. Second, there's so much trust between us. And there's just, we've been doing this so long together that we, we can kind of finish each other's sandwiches, as they say.
And I'll add this, the fact that Jari was against the kind of the changing strategies or building a new product actually is what you want from a co-founder. You want people to question you. I think this is the biggest thing. I mean, we were arguing. We were telling the employees, guys, we're not fighting. We're arguing. Go back to your rooms. Everything is okay. But all that said, I mean, we were being challenged, right? I mean, if all three of us like were necessarily on the same page, we might have missed something. Jari, by arguing, was giving us his view of what we're doing and challenged us on this. And the nice thing, again, that we kind of all have as a part of how we work together is we can disagree, but once we kind of decide, we go with it. And that's something we have been doing for years, and that works for us great.
That's a fantastic, yeah. It's a fantastic model, and one that I think should be an example to more companies probably out there in the world who would have fewer problems if they facilitated robust discussions internally. So thank you all for joining us. I really appreciate this. I know our listening audience appreciates this. I think is this the first time? Jari, you're the previous podcast host. Is it the first time that the three of you?
Yeah, we never did a founders podcast. So this is the first time.
Really?
It's really, really fun. Yeah, we never did one before.
Thanks for inviting me. It's like first time in 12 years on the podcast for me. So.
Absolutely.
That's not true. You were invited multiple times. You turned us down multiple times. He's not presenting it in the right way.
We'll have to do this again in another 12 years. Yes, 12 more years. We'll record another one. We'll be sure to invite Dima.
Well,
all right.
Thank you all.
Thanks for hosting us. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Oro, a leading innovator and provider of customer-driven, powerful, and connected open-source software for B2B digital transformation. Oro seeks to build long-term, trustful relationships with its customers, integrators, developers, and technology partners. by empowering people with the best tools to digitalize their business. Find out more at OroInc.com. That's OroInc.com. Thank you for listening to B2B Commerce Uncut, A Journey Through Change, powered by Oro. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.